British Sky Broadcasting, Rank Film Distributors, and Columbia Pictures present a Laura Ziskin production, To Die For. Directed by Gus Van Sant, starring Nicole Kidman as Suzanne Moretto, Matt Dillon as her husband Larry, and Joaquin Phoenix as Jimmy. Music by Danny Elfman. Audio described by Therese Birch on behalf of MCS Agency. A ruthlessly ambitious TV weather girl is not going to let anything or anyone come between her and her career. Little Hope, New Hampshire, a small town on the coast covered in a thick layer of snow. A graveyard. Journalists with video cameras and microphones are running back and forth amongst the snow-covered headstones. One of them trips and falls face down. The others continue chasing around. A funeral. The mourners and coffin are surrounded by a posse of press. A tall, slim, attractive blonde woman with dark glasses holds a fluffy dog. She is the centre of attention of the photographers. Her picture appears in a newspaper under the heading, Little Hope's own weather girl reporter is possible suspect in murder investigation. Another headline reads, Local TV station WWEN weather girl arrested for murder. I am 110% not guilty, claims Moretto. A magazine cover with the headline, Suzanne Moretto, blonde temptress. Another headline, I love Larry Moretto, my husband, very much with all my heart, Suzanne Moretto. More headlines and photos of Suzanne. Gimme ring, Russell. My wife would kill me, Larry. She'd kill you, Jimmy. She planned to take me to Hollywood, Lydia. She thought about me all the time, James. Don't you want to see it? Lost my virginity. Columns of newsprint all about a murder case involving sex and intrigue. A photo of Suzanne holding her fluffy dog. The caption, Suzanne is all smiles with Walter, her dog. A photo of Suzanne, finger suggestively in her mouth, wearing a very short skirt, revealing long, slim legs. More headlines, sex, violence, and the weather.
Here's what I found out. That all of life is a learning experience. Everything is part of a big master plan. But sometimes it's hard to read. I mean, it's like if you get too close to the screen, all you can see is a bunch of little dots. You don't see the big picture until you stand back. But when you do, everything comes into focus.
Suzanne is videoing herself for an audition tape.
Hi. My name is Suzanne Moretto. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Suzanne Moretto is my married name. My own name is Suzanne Stone. That's my professional name. Suzanne Stone. It's not like I have any negative feelings about the name Moretto. Moretto is the name, after all, of my husband, who I love. Very, very much.
She dabs her eyes with a tissue.
Sorry. It's also the name of his parents, Joe and Angela Moretto, and of his lovely and talented sister, James Moretto, who have been like a second family to me, and who I regard as I do my own family, particularly since my recent tragedy. And who just through knowing and being related to them, have given me what I think is a very precious and valuable insight into the different kinds of ethnic relationships that are part of the very things that I've been trying to explore as a member of the professional media.
Suzanne Sistrin, or Janice Moretto, dark and plain, is skating. She stops to talk to camera.
First impressions in one word? You really want to know?
Suzanne first arrives at Moretto's restaurant.
Four letters, begins with C.
I've never seen one of them.
Cold. Cold. C-O-L-D. Cold. Yeah.
So what did you think about Suzanne when you first met her?
I just didn't get the Suzanne thing. I mean, all the girls around town thought Larry was really cute. I mean, they always used to hang out at the restaurant on the nights when my dad would let Larry and his dopey rock and play there, just to, you know.
In the Moretto restaurant, Larry, dark and handsome, plays the drums. Young girls watch him, smiling and flirting. Couples dance. Suzanne, looking young and demure, in a gingham dress, stands at the back, sipping a soft drink through a straw, looking disinterested. Larry winks at her.
Laura Risley, I remember she released Peggy Holden. I mean, she's kind of a slut, but I mean, he could have had anybody, basically, is what I'm saying. But I don't know, Suzanne, blonde, I don't know.
Suzanne is outside the restaurant, arms folded, leaning against a car, looking sulkily across at Larry on a motorbike.
Well, yeah, sure, I could have said some things. Well, to tell you the truth, I did say some things. Yeah, it's my brother. But, in a very subtle way. Larry, what do you think of Angela Raguzzo?
She's all right.
She's hot.
Why?
She wants you to ask her out.
Look, sis, don't try and fix me up with people. It's embarrassing.
All right. What do you think of Dana DeFalco?
Oh, great. You want me to go out with the girl whose father's in the mob?
Who says he's in the mob?
Everybody.
Everybody. So, don't you want a little excitement?
Believe me, I got all the excitement I can take.
Oh, with who? The Ice Maiden?
Oh, you don't know what you're talking about.
I know?
No.
Okay. Inform me.
Well, it's none of your business. But Suzanne, she looks, you know, very fragile and delicate, right? Mm-hmm. But look, I don't even know why I'm telling you this. Details are too graphic. But let me just tell you, she's like a volcano.
When people come from miles around just to watch her explode.
What? Is that it?
Very funny. Very funny.
Man, when he says to me,
I'm gonna marry her.
Wait a minute. You're what? You're what, I said? And then he says,
I'm telling you, sis, she's it. She's the golden girl of my dreams.
God. And I did one of these.
Finger in the throat.
Which I regretted right away, because, you know, he looked at me with that kind of doggy look that guys get. I'm just kidding. Kidding. She can't even bowl.
Yes, yes. Let me tell you something, all right?
Yeah.
She's like a delicate China doll.
Larry, you ever try kissing a doll? You know, they don't kiss back.
She's like one of those porcelain figurines that Mom collects. She is so pure and delicate and innocent. You just have to look at her and you want to take care of her for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I can see that. So, anyway, so when she, Suzanne, says to me,
of course, if you're actively seeking a career in the professional ice skating field, in the spotlight, so to speak, I think you have to maximize your positive features.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is that a qualified plastic surgeon could just snip away those little beauty spots or facial blemishes, whatever you want to call them, and you'd see how much better you'd feel about yourself.
You know, commenting about my face and stuff. I knew where she was going, Miss Fixer Upper.
I believe that Mr. Gorbachev, you know, the man who ran Russia for so long? Mm-hmm. I believe that he would still be in power today if he'd done what so many people suggested and had that big purple thing taken off his forehead. I firmly believe that. Someday I hope to interview him and we would discuss that along with other more pertinent international things, you know?
I'm telling you, sis, she's going to be the next Barbara Walters.
Is that right?
Well, Barbara does have many admirable qualities. Wide range of knowledge of current events and a deep sympathy for people's inner feelings, which is a trait so many people have with the Jewish persuasion.
Isn't she something else?
So, that was it. I mean, done deal. Finito. He was a goner.
Back to Suzanne's audition tape.
The point is that, for instance, Connie Chung, who is married, I believe, to Maury Povich, the well-known interviewer, doesn't say, hello, this is Connie Povich with the news, now does she? And I don't think she would be embarrassed by it or anything like that, because she's already pretty ethnic when you think about it. Or, to take another example, someone who doesn't appear to have an ethnic bone in her body, there's Jane Pauley, who I strongly relate to, because, you know, we have roommates. Although I thankfully don't have to struggle with a weight problem like she does. And she also, to the best of my knowledge, has never identified herself audience-wise as Jane Trudeau, even though her husband, Mr. Trudeau, is a prominent cartoonist of some kind. And not, as so many people believe, the ex-president of Canada. So what I'm saying is this. There are some people who never know who they are or who they want to be until it's too late. And that is a real tragedy in my book. Because I always knew who I was and who I wanted to be. Always.
Okay. Who wants to be on TV? There she is.
Oh, look at who's looking at herself.
Suzanne, look at
that. Look at the camera.
See?
And look at what a darling.
Oh, sweetheart.
Can't you get in focus better?
And we're back with the families of Suzanne and Larry Moretto. Mr. Stone. Mr. Stone?
Well, first, I have to admit, we didn't think too much of it. The relationship. I mean, here was our daughter. Your college, yes, but with good grades and a degree in,
electronic journalism.
Obviously. But still, a boy whose education was limited to high school. And I remember saying to her, Honey,
I'm worried that you don't know what you're getting into with this kid.
Dad, I'm not a little girl anymore.
I know that, sweetheart. All I'm saying is that we come from pretty different backgrounds.
For all you know, his family could be mixed up with the mafia or something. I'm sorry, Joe. No problem,
Marl.
I was just being...
I understand. No, I understand. Please.
Of course, you just laughed at me.
Dad, don't worry.
Well, I have to worry. That's what dads do.
Larry and Suzanne are on his motorbike without helmets. She nibbles his ear.
If you ask me, I'd say that Larry appealed to a side of her that you wouldn't ordinarily know was there. It was a kind of a... what?
A wild side.
Suzanne's sister.
Well, not wild. But,
Larry and Suzanne make love energetically up against a tree.
Wild.
I thought he would marry, I don't know, you know, like a nice Italian girl. But like the guy in The Godfather says, this is America, okay? The melting pot. Anyway, one day, Larry comes over to me, he says,
I'm gonna tell you something, Pop. She's going places. She's got goals, she's... You know, she's studying stuff. She's sending out resumes all the time. Can I show you what she gave me for my birthday?
A cassette.
You can be the one. The one what?
Well, the one anything. That's the point. It's a self-motivation. It's from that guy on TV, the inspirational millionaire with all the houses and yachts. You know.
Sounds pretty serious, Larry.
Serious, Pop. I sold my drums.
You sold your drums?
Yep.
And he did. He sold his drums, and he turned himself right around. Just for her.
The veil Suzanne wore, she had copied from a picture in a magazine the exact same one Maria Shriver wore at her wedding.
Larry was, he was so proud, you know, because Suzanne, she designed the wedding rings all by herself. You want me to describe them for you? They were round and gold. I mean, big fucking deal.
Come on, Suze, let's go.
I'll still never find a guy like you, Dad.
What?
Suzanne throws her bouquet beyond the reach of her bridesmaids. Now her mother speaks on the TV show.
We got a postcard from Suzanne every single day that they were on their honeymoon. And it very much surprised us that they went to Florida, because Suzanne was never one to lie around the beach. But Larry was very much into boating and fishing, and I think she just wanted to make him happy.
That's a pretty little lady you got there.
Yes, sir. We've been married for 4 days and 18 hours.
Well, I wouldn't let her out of my sight for very long.
Well, she can't go in the sun. It's not good to tan when you're on TV.
TV? What show is she on? Have you ever seen her?
Not yet, but you will.
Larry blows Suzanne a kiss. She waves off Larry as he goes sea fishing. He's in bed asleep. Suzanne comes into the hotel room smartly dressed.
Hi, honey.
Suzanne.
Did you miss me? Did you dream about me, babe?
Suzanne.
She climbs on top of Larry and kisses him passionately.
Been a pretty successful honeymoon, because when they came back, they were...
radiant.
Exactly. Radiant.
Remember, Larry took the money he was saving up in case he wanted to go back to college. He put a down payment on that condo over the Heights.
And he bought her that pretty little Mustang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi!
All right, Janice, how are you?
So you thought Larry changed a lot after he and Suzanne were married?
Oh, totally. It was like suddenly, you know, he went from Van Halen to Jerry Vale overnight. I don't know. She didn't have any... Well, she thought she had taste, but...
Larry and Suzanne's families are over for a gourmet dinner.
Barquettes with leek chiffonade. And this is a dish that they serve in Johnny Carson's favorite restaurant in Hollywood.
Well, hey, it's good enough for Johnny.
Larry scowls at his sister. Suzanne pours coffee.
Oh, was that some meal or what?
Oh.
I say Julia Child's better watch her back. She'll be looking for another job, huh?
Oh, Larry.
Well, I won't be doing this every night. Planning to start this exercise class so I can get rid of a few pounds myself.
From where? Your feet?
On TV, the camera adds 5 pounds.
Is that true? I didn't know that. Did you know that, John?
No.
Talking about exercise, I gotta go.
Hey.
I gotta rehearse. I got a rehearsal some god-awful hour all the way over in Norwalk.
What are you rehearsing, dear?
Janice has a job in the Ice Follies. They're going on tour in September.
Hey, sis, that's fabulous.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm just one of the chorus, you know, now. But, well, actually, I do skate this one medley. It's kind of a, you know, salute to great TV shows. I skate the Peggy Lipton part in the Mod Squad number, you know?
Peggy Lipton?
Yeah, get to wear a blonde wig and everything, you know.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah, you know, they're talking about, like, well, maybe a TV special this year, so that could be great.
Well, now, listen, hang on, everybody, because, we've got a pretty important announcement ourselves to make. And I think congratulations are in order.
Oh, no! Oh, God! Oh,
Larry?
No!
Wait, cut. It's not that.
You're not?
No, I'm not pregnant, for God's sake.
Susie's got a job.
What?
Over at WWEN, the TV station. First woman they ever hired. Isn't that right, Suze?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Suze is on her way now, and nothing is going to stop her.
Mm-hmm. Suzanne smiles smugly and raises an eyebrow at Janice, who smiles back unenthusiastically.
We're proud of you.
Larry's mother is at the grocer's.
So how are the newlyweds?
Oh, they're doing great. Yeah. Thanks, so.
Yeah, cute kids.
Aren't they just?
Yeah. Hey, did you like the Barquettes?
The what?
With the Lee Chiffonade. Was it okay? Tell you the truth, we never did them before, but she showed us this recipe in a book, so no problem.
I never told anyone. Even Joe. So she couldn't cook. There are worse crimes, as we all know.
You're not anybody in America unless you're on TV. On TV is where we learn about who we really are. Because what's the point of doing anything worthwhile if nobody's watching? And if people are watching, it makes you a better person.
Marry me.
A scruffy teenage girl, Lydia, talks to camera. A TV is on in the background.
I thought she was like a goddess of some kind. Like Lady Di before she dumped the prince and went nudist and everything. Suzanne bought me this dress, which I hope to fit someday. Suzanne Moretta was a beautiful human being with real dreams and aspirations.
On their honeymoon, Suzanne waves off Larry's fishing boat from the jetty and turns round to look at the hotel.
To say, opportunity is always knocking, but if you aren't listening, its knuckles get sore and it moves to another house. Something like that. She said that even on her honeymoon, she had Larry take her to this hotel in Florida where there's gonna be this kind of convention of all these big shot TV people that she'd read about in a magazine. Which, of course, she didn't tell Larry because she didn't want to maybe hurt his feelings about her attending to her career while they were bonding sexually, so to speak.
Suzanne watches a TV executive address a conference.
So the German reporter says to the Hungarian editor, of course she's always smiling. She gets faxed at least 10 times a day.
Suzanne smiles and moves forward.
I know that's a silly joke, but it does illustrate our central thesis today, which is here and now in the... You know, a fast-moving computer age, it's the...
The executive notices her at the back.
In our fast-moving computer age, it's the medium of television that joins together our global community. And it is the...
She takes off her sun hat and distracts him.
It is the television journalist who serves as messenger, bringing the world into our homes and our homes into the world. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
She smiles and claps the speaker. They are together at a dinner table with another couple.
The point is, Miss...
Stone.
Miss Stone.
Suzanne.
Suzanne Stone. Mm-hmm. That's a good name. Now, that's a name you can remember. The point is, Suzanne, if you want it bad enough, you'll get it. But you gotta really want it. You gotta be able to do things that ordinary people wouldn't do. You see what I'm saying?
I think so.
How about another of those?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Sweetheart, yes. Give us another all around, okay?
Okay.
Anyway. When I was at the network, there was this gal from some 10-watt station in the Midwest where she did the weather. The weather. So she comes up to New York in her best Donna Karan dress for success knockoff. Blonde hair all done up in a French twist. And an audition tape in her imitation leather briefcase. Along with a letter of introduction from her station manager. And it says, please give your most serious consideration to the bearer of this letter, Miss So-and-so, who is of moderate intelligence, who has some experience in broadcasting, and more importantly, who can suck your cock until your eyes pop out.
Suzanne looks uncomfortable.
And you know who that gal is today.
Who?
He whispers in her ear.
Is that true?
It's true.
And here comes the best part.
Oh, yes?
This is the best part.
About 10 years ago, I'm at some TV conference somewhere, and I run into that station manager, and I congratulate him on his letter-writing skills. And he doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Oh. Why doesn't he?
Because, sweetheart, he didn't write the letter.
Oh. Oh, who did?
She did. She wrote it herself.
Oh. Oh, I see.
It's good, isn't it?
I love it.
I watch your show all the time.
Everybody does.
So, what do you think, Suzanne?
He strokes her thigh under the table. She smiles.
What do I think about what?
Well...
He stares at her lasciviously. She preens and blushes. She arrives back in the hotel room where Larry is in bed.
Suzanne? Suze?
Hi, honey.
Hey, Suze. Where were you?
I couldn't sleep.
When I put out the sign for a gal Friday, I figured I'd be interviewing a couple of high school dropouts who wouldn't mind going over to the mall and picking up donuts and emptying the ashtrays, that kind of thing. And this is when we first meet gangbusters. That's what George and I called Suzanne. not to her face, of course.
Looking imperious, her hair in a French pleat, Suzanne strides down the road in a smart suit and walks into the offices of local cable TV station WWEN.
Mr. Grant, I am the woman you are looking for. My name is Suzanne Stone Moretto, but I plan to use Suzanne Stone as my professional name. I'd like you to look over my resume, which details both my educational background and my references in the media field. Mr. Grant, I can make you a solemn promise that I will be dedicated and committed to this job.
Whoa, hang on a sec, Suzanne. We're only looking for someone to answer the mail, run a couple of errands, you know, minimum pay, no benefits.
Oh, money is not my main concern, Mr. Grant. I just want a chance to contribute something. I think you'll find I have very valuable ideas about programming and
You're not hearing what I'm saying. Take a look around you, if you would. I mean, Suzanne, we're talking local cable station here.
Oh, I just want a chance to get my foot in the door, Mr. Grant. Everybody has to start somewhere. Do you know where Edward Amaro started?
No, I don't.
No, well, neither do I offhand. But I don't think it was at the top. Do you? I live only 5 minutes away from here. I will be willing and eager to respond to any newsworthy emergency you put in front of me.
Suzanne,
anything you want. Mr. Grant, this is a dream I have had all my life. I will do anything to get this job, anything.
This is my associate, George.
Suzanne looks at gawky George and puts the letter she's written back in her bag.
Oh, pleased to meet you, George.
We'll think about it.
Mr. Grant, I believe that my assets...
Hey! I said we'll think about it. And we will.
Okay? Thank you.
She starts to leave, but stops and turns.
I believe that in our fast-moving computer age, it is the medium of television that joins together the global community. And it is the television journalist who serves as messenger, bringing the world into our homes and our homes into the world. It has always been my dream to become such a messenger. I look to you, gentlemen, now to make that dream a reality.
She leaves. George and Ed Grant look at each other, bemused.
Jesus Christ.
Gangbusters. Fucking gangbusters.
Outside the office, Suzanne takes out the letter, rips it up, and puts it in a bin. It's morning. She's in bed with her husband.
Hey. Hey, come on back to bed.
I gotta go to work.
Come on, 10 minutes.
No, I gotta go.
Come on, 5 minutes.
I gotta put my face on.
Come on, put your face on me. 2 minutes.
Take your hand away.
Larry looks hurt as Suzanne strides into the bathroom, shutting the door behind her, then letting her dog in.
Come on, Walter.
The dog. It was a cute little thing, though, wasn't it?
She was just crazy about that
it
dog.
It was darling.
Suzanne opens her front door. There's a box tied with ribbon on the step. She takes off the lid. Inside, a fluffy puppy. She scoops him up. On his collar, a card. To Suzanne, I'd die for your love. And a heart with an arrow through it. Lydia talks to camera.
She named it Walter after Walter, is it Cronkite? The guy used to be on TV. I think he was Dan Rather's uncle or something.
It was like a hairball puked up by some demon from hell.
There wasn't much to do. Most of the time she just sat over there and worked on her file. Her idea file. She had so many ideas.
This is the presentation on that idea I told you, with me going to the local movie theaters, talking to the people coming out to see what they really think. An actual, vox populi, if you know the term. Here's a memo on that children's show I mentioned, with me as the hostess and the live in-studio animals. If you could just look it over tonight, give me your thoughts in the morning. Just a couple of pages outlining that concept for interviewing everyday citizens like mailmen, school crossing guards, to better inform our citizenry on what kind of valuable services are available to them.
Ed Grant grimaces and looks at George, who shakes his head.
After a few months, she wore me down. I let her do the evening weather report. Well, what she was fine at, although with all the preparation she put into it, you'd think she was covering D-Day.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Cameraman George cues Suzanne.
You're on.
Good evening from the WWEN Weather Center.
Weather Center?
The heavy system we were expecting. Moving down from the north.
At home, Suzanne's mother photographs the TV. At the restaurant, Suzanne's in-laws are watching. Larry dusts the TV screen.
Will remain cool, with patches of fog in the morning and probably some light. But not serious umbrella weather.
Two men stop eating and look at the TV, unimpressed.
Well, that's about it for your up-to-the-minute weather report. This is your WWEN weather person saying I'll be with you again tomorrow evening, rain or shine.
Larry, smoking a cigar, leads the reluctant diners in applause. The two men go back to their meal. An awkward teenage boy, Jimmy, in prison, talks to camera.
I never really gave a rat's ass about the weather. Until I got to know Miss Amaretto. Now, I take it very serious. If it rains, or there's lightning or thunder, or if it snows, I have to jack off. Oh, right. Sorry.
Suzanne, in a smart suit with a short skirt, smiling seductively, walks through a crowded schoolyard past Jimmy. He has long hair, is smoking, and listening to a CD player. He watches her walk past, mouth open, looking dumb. Next to him, his classmates Russell and Lydia follow his gaze. Suzanne walks up to a teacher in glasses and bow tie and shakes his hand warmly. The three pupils stare at her intently. The teacher addresses the class to introduce Suzanne.
Today's guest, Mrs. Moretto, is a representative of our local television station, WWEN. And she's
going
to...
On-air correspondent.
I'm sorry?
Well, actually, I'm an on-air correspondent.
Well, that's fine. Anyway, Mrs. Moretto has asked to have a few words with you, and I know that while I'm gone, you will give her your best attention.
Here's my best attention.
Russell pretends to masturbate.
Did you say something, Russell?
Oh, Mr. Finlinson, I didn't. Didn't.
Suzanne stands in front of the class. The teacher leaves.
Well, first of all, I would like to thank you all for extending me the courtesy of your time and attention.
Yeah, I got some to extend.
And I would like to say that I hope you'll all be as excited about the project I'm here to propose to you as I am. First of all, I want to ask, have any of you actually ever been on television before? Not counting home video, of course. No one?
Lydia puts up her hand.
I was. What's your name?
Lee Mertz.
And how did it happen that you made this appearance?
Oh, it was down at Benson's Electronics. They have this video camera in the window, and when you walk by, they take your picture.
Well, Lydia, this may come as a surprise, but that is how some of our most famous personalities started out. Just seeing what they looked like accidentally.
Is that true?
Absolutely. Now, I am producing a television documentary about kids just like yourself. Because it is teenagers like you who are the future of our nation. And after all, I used to be a teenager myself once. Back in the dark ages.
The class looked bored.
So, I would like to find out about your way of life. How you feel about your education. How you feel about things like peer pressure. How you feel about drugs. Rap music.
Pussy.
Do we have to get permission slips from our parents for this?
No, that wouldn't be necessary.
Hey, Jimmy, when'd your folks learn to read and write?
Hey, read this shit face.
Jimmy sticks up a finger.
For your interest.
The teacher comes in. Russell has been trying to look up Suzanne's skirt by pretending to pick up a pen. The teacher wags a finger at him.
Everything settled then?
Yes.
Well then, let's give Mrs. Moretto our thanks and a round of applause.
The pupils reluctantly clap. Suzanne beams. Jimmy stares at her.
Enough.
Checking he's not being watched, Jimmy, dark and good-looking, signs his name on a form on the notice board. Teens Speak Out, a video documentary by Suzanne Stone. Lydia, sitting on a car outside her tatty home, talks to camera.
Suzanne.
I'd never really signed up for anything before, except an after-school Weight Watchers program. Which I was asked to leave anyway, because they said I wasn't motivated and because I gained 11 pounds in 3 weeks. But this was different, because it turned out to be the most important thing I ever did.
Lydia signs her name on the board. In an empty classroom, the teacher stands over Russell, who's on the floor holding his cheek.
Now, here's some advice, Russell, dear. That nice Mrs. Moretto is married to a boy whose father is a pillar of the Italian-American community, and if he knew how you had insulted his only beloved daughter-in-law, he would make a phone call, one phone call, and a man with a big knife would show up in the middle of the night and turn you into a eunuch. Do you know what a eunuch is, Russell? Of course you don't. But you can find it in the dictionary. If you don't know how to spell it, you can look it up under Nutless Wonders. So I'm thinking there must be some simple way for you to make it up to Mrs. Moretto for your offensive behavior. What do you think?
Not a unit.
Russell walks up to the notice board and adds his name to Suzanne's sign-up sheet under Jimmy's and Lydia's. Back to Suzanne's audition tape.
I have to say that the staff at WWEN responded with total enthusiasm to my project and gave me excellent support, both editorially and technically. Because I think they could sense almost immediately that I was on to something important in a sociological sense.
She must have taped God knows how many hundreds of hours with these three dorky kids, who, from what I've seen, would have a major struggle on their hands just reciting the days of the week in proper order. Forget about social insights. Here, I'll show you.
Ed plays a video in his office.
This Teen Speak Out project. Take one.
Oh, no.
I'm Suzanne Stone, and these are... All right, now, let's just say something in general about ourselves.
Like what?
Like, what do you plan to do with your future, Lydia?
I don't exactly have a plan.
Well, you must have aspirations of some kind.
What?
A dream, a life goal.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you that. Lydia's big life goal?
Yeah.
Just fuck the new kids on the block.
That's
Russell.
A dirty life!
Russell! I don't want to hear language like that anymore. It is very offensive, and it is unsuitable for broadcast under FCC regulations. You got that?
Yeah. Anyways, it was Motley Crue.
All right, Lydia.
Just for your information.
What about you, James?
Jimmy stares at Suzanne, who's filming him.
James?
Huh? I think you get the point. It's not exactly Mike Wallace eat your heart out. But I have to say, I've never seen more persistence. I once said to her, about we call it a night?
Just need to get this reel cleaned up. An hour, maybe two. You go ahead.
I'll look up.
Don't you have that nice husband waiting at home for you?
Well, he knows how much this means to me. Besides, he works full-time at his dad's restaurant now, so he gets home real late.
Well, Suzanne, I sure pity the person who says no to you.
No one ever does.
Leave her alone. She runs away.
Suzanne views her tape. Russell is hit by his clam fisherman father as they stand in the shallows. Jimmy traps his finger in a mouse trap. She rewinds the tape while Jimmy is staring at her.
Heaven is waiting for you. James.
In prison, Jimmy is talking to camera.
James.
See, nobody ever called me that before. All anyone ever called me was Jimmy or Jimbo or other stuff. My mom told me that I was named Jimmy after this old movie star she liked named Jimmy Dean. But, well, when anyone ever asked me, I always said that I was named Jim after Jim Morrison of The Doors. Because, you know, I had this great kind of life, like just traveling around and writing his songs, and having women beg him to do it to them. Even to take his organ out on stage. That kind of life that I always thought I'd like to have.
Jimmy and Russell and Lydia fool around in a scrapyard of wrecked cars.
I bet he jumps her all the time, you know? Like after dinner, just bang, right in the kitchen table. Fucking Duran even.
Yeah, maybe both.
Well, because the skinny bitches, they can't get enough, you know? I mean, they're always wanting it. That's a medical fact.
Yeah.
Because the nerves in their body are all bunched up in their snatch, you know what I mean? They're all right up in there, so they're all wet.
I don't think that's true.
What are you, a doctor?
She's a perfectly nice person.
You think she's gonna make you a big movie star, huh, Lydia?
Just to be on TV would be something nice. It would be something different.
They got something different for you right here, all right?
You're a disgusting pig.
Yeah.
Russell smashes car windows with a bat.
You know what we should do? We should get some fucking money out of her, huh?
What makes you think she's gotten me?
Are you shitting me? Her husband, Mr. fucking Big Cock, owns a fucking Guinea restaurant, all right? Look at the car she drives. Look at her fucking fingernails. Big, red, sculpted, glossy nails. She got plenty of money. That's rich bitch stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
You think she's some kind of hot shit, don't you?
She's
just looks...
What?
Clean.
Amaretto family barbecue by the pool. Suzanne looks bored and detached. Larry plays with some kids.
Oh, okay. Larry, come on, get ready. Larry. Kids, stop it.
It's a real pretty outfit, honey.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, Suz, you want one of these?
No, thanks.
No? What about one of these? You're going in.
No, thanks.
Sure is great with those kids.
Angela, he's got to stop eating all that junk. He's getting a rubber tie around him like some old man.
He's going to make a wonderful father someday.
He calls them love handles. I call them flab.
What about you?
Me? You think I look bad?
No. What about the idea of kids? Is what I mean.
I love kids. I absolutely love them. But a woman in my field with a baby has two strikes against her. I say I'm in New York, right? And I'm
New
like,
New York?
Going, well, for instance. And I'm suddenly called to go on some foreign assignment, like a royal wedding or a revolution in South America. You can't run from place to place with your crew following and conduct serious interviews with a big fat stomach. Or say you've already had the baby and you've got this blubber, these boobs out the ear. It's just so gross.
Help it! Help me!
Hey, careful! Hey.
Excuse me.
Nice.
You having a good time?
Well, I want to get out of the sun. I have to go prepare my show.
Sure, we'd like to have a couple of them around the house. What do you think, Suze? Suze, what do you think?
I think if you wanted a babysitter, you should have married Mary Poppins.
Suzanne arrives at the office looking businesslike.
Hiya. Wake up, George. Let's hit it.
Ed looks at his watch. Larry is at home with a dog watching his wife on TV.
Hi, everybody. This is Suzanne Stone with your late night sign-off weather report from the WWEN Weather Center. I don't think I need to tell you that today was a hot one. That old Mercury zoomed on up to 91. That's a record-breaking temperature for this day. Tomorrow promises to be more of the same, with relevant numbers way up there in the 90s, humidity to match, and maybe just the hint of a breeze or two. Won't be much help with this heat. The kind of heat that makes me want to just head for that old swimming hole with my friend James and strip off everything, including my panties, which you can see right through anyway, and poke my soft pink tongue in his mouth and slide my hand way up the inside of his leg until he's so hot that he rolls over on top of me and I'm yelling, James, his name, James, James, what are you doing to me with your big, fat heart?
Jimmy is watching Suzanne on TV fantasizing.
Oh, Jesus.
Listen to me, Larry. Okay. So, she finishes her little docudrama, whatever the fuck it is. She sends it off to someone in New York, and while she's waiting around for an answer, you should forgive the expression, knock her up. Knock her up. And then, whoa, Los Angeles. Well, what has Los Angeles got to do with it? Of course, and what? Advanced media. Advanced bullshit, Larry. Look. I'm sorry, you're my brother, okay? I know you love her and you want her to succeed and all that, but sometimes, man, you just gotta say no. Sorry, we have to run, Mr. What do you mean, how? N-O, that's how. Angling to his
right comes to the... Larry watches TV. Suzanne comes in and goes straight upstairs, ignoring him.
Suzanne?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Just sitting here, waiting for you.
Larry, I asked you to please keep your feet off the coffee table.
We gotta talk about some things, Suzanne.
What kind of things?
I think you know what kind of things.
No, I don't. You know, I can't just wait until tomorrow. I'm really tired.
No.
What?
No. I don't think it can wait. No.
Feet back on the table.
Sit down. We gotta talk about this stuff. The thing is, I think we got this great future ahead of us. And I just want to make sure that we both understand what the priorities are. I think Pop's gonna let me take over managing a restaurant. And I got a lot of exciting ideas, like introducing some new menu items and bringing in some live music on the weekends, and maybe even one night a week, open house for local singers and comics. Which you, with your TV background, you could help me with that. You know, by maybe shooting the acts and then maybe selling the tapes, which you could edit yourself back to the performers. I talked to my folks about it and they thought it would be a great idea. Great idea. Really. And believe me, Suze, I am not selling short what you're doing now. I mean, you know, the weather report stuff, which you're really good at. But let's face facts, it's probably not gonna lead to any big network offers. And this way, we could be working together in both our respective fields, doing what a family is supposed to be doing. A family, that's what I'm talking about, Suze. Hmm? What do you think?
He drinks from a beer bottle. She focuses on him, expressionless. She smiles, looking thoughtful. Back to Suzanne's tape.
It's true that the road my husband and I chose to travel on was paved with many speed bumps. Larry said he would never stand in my way, whatever happened. But the word failure is not part of my vocabulary. My commitment to my career or my marriage or whatever has always been 110%. Regardless of how fast I was growing in my vocation, I would never leave Larry behind. The word divorce was never mentioned.
Lydia, scruffy and butch, is sitting with Walter on her lap, gazing at Suzanne in a fitting room who's trying on sexy underwear. Suzanne strips off in front of Lydia, who watches with admiration. Suzanne tries on a lacy bra and pants.
Ta-da! What do you think?
Oh,
like the color?
Yeah.
Doesn't make me look fat, does it?
No.
I think I'm gonna get it.
Oh, Jesus. Mr. Moretto is going to...
Mr. Moretto?
Yeah.
Right. Let me tell you something, Lee. No. No, you wouldn't understand.
Maybe I would.
Well, you grow up, you know? You think it's all gonna be like a fairy tale? Like your Sleeping Beauty, and along comes this Prince Charming, and he looks at you, and it's nighttime, and he smiles at you, and kisses you.
Yeah, I know that story.
And then you wake up, and it's daylight, and you look at him. It's just when you work all day trying to perfect yourself and create something meaningful, you expect some support. Does anyone ever say, did you have a good shoot today, or how's the editing going, or anything of that nature?
I guess not.
No. I mean, point is, Larry is a nice guy, you know? But he just doesn't know a thing about television. Let's get out of here.
Mrs. Moretto bought me lots of nice stuff. Like this ankle bracelet, for instance. And a bottle of real expensive perfume. Scent, she called it. Which I'm saving for a special occasion. No one ever really bought me stuff before. Except my mom's boyfriend, Chester. Who got me for my birthday when I was 12 a bottle of something called Garden of Eden Body Oil. Which he said would be good for my skin. And what you wanted to show me how to use, which I let him do.
And he did other things for a while. But when I was 13, I got this mild case of TB, and he wasn't so interested in anyone.
You just have to block that out of your memory. You know, like some scary TV movie where you just change the channel and you pretend like it never happened. Before you know it, the whole thing would be like a bad dream.
Yeah. Anyway, my mom keeps this gun hidden up in her closet because of all the sex fiend killers around. And one time, I told him if he didn't leave me alone, I'd get it out and I'd shoot him.
I mean, he didn't give me any more trouble or anything. And now I guess I wish I hadn't told her all that. Because maybe it put some ideas in her mind or something. I don't know. But I just told her stuff I'd never told anyone. Because she was my friend. She was my only real friend.
Larry comes downstairs with a suitcase.
Where are you going?
Oh, I told you, hon. Pop and I are going up to the trade show in Freeport. I leave it from the restaurant. I told you about it.
Yeah, right.
Look, you gonna be okay?
Sure.
Suze, will you think about what we talked about?
I have been.
That's great, hon, because I believe I got something here that's really gonna work. And you know who I want with me, by my side, don't you?
Who?
Who? My best girl, that's who. My beautiful little lady. Look, I left the phone number on the fridge. Don't forget to lock the garage.
Bye.
She smiles sweetly at Larry and goes back into the living room. Wearing tight jeans and a short sweater, she sensuously stretches up her arms, revealing her flat stomach. It's evening. Arms crossed, she slowly walks to the front door. Jimmy and Lydia are on the step, smiling.
Hi. You know what I'm thinking, Larry? Why don't we get some artificial plants for the restaurant?
Good idea. This way we don't have to worry about watering.
Exactly.
While Larry and his father are in the car, Suzanne dances and films Jimmy and Lydia dancing in her living room.
Come on, Lydia.
I can't do this, Mrs. Moretta.
Yeah, of course you can. You just have to let your natural sense of rhythm take over.
Nothing is wrong.
I don't think I have one of those.
Yeah, she really stinks at this.
Here, watch me.
You know, there's nothing wrong.
Watch me.
Nothing
watch
is wrong.
She grinds her hips.
You can do that. Can't you?
I can't do that.
Of course you can. You just have to move.
Move your body.
Come on.
Suzanne holds Lydia from behind and dances suggestively.
Come on. Relax.
Relax, you're like a stick.
I can't do this.
You can do this.
No, I gotta sit down.
Make
me feel funny.
Come on, James.
Suzanne dances sexily in front of Jimmy, watched by Lydia and Walter the dog. Jimmy smiles broadly, Lydia sighs enviously.
Come on, James.
I'm dancing.
Jimmy holds Suzanne from behind as she dances.
Lydia?
Yeah?
Did you do me an enormous favor?
Sure, what?
Walter hasn't been out for hours. Can you take him for a walk around the block?
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna go upstairs. Take my sweater off. Oh, it's really hot in here.
Yeah.
When you come back, I'll fix you something to eat.
Okay.
Oh, and Liddy, don't let him come back until he's done his business, okay? Like a good little boy.
Lydia sulkily picks up Walter and leaves as Suzanne and Jimmy dance face to face. Lydia returns down the dark street with Walter. She comes through the front door. She bends over and takes off Walter's lead and walks into the hall.
Hello?
She puts the lead on the hall table and checks the empty living room. She stands at the bottom of the stairs looking up.
I have to use the bathroom.
She walks slowly up the stairs, up to the dark landing. Mouth open, she stands outside a bedroom door. It is slightly ajar. There is a light shining through the crack. She turns and pushes it open a little more and stares in, half hiding behind the doorframe. Back to Jimmy in prison.
I was like, I was in one of those. Okay, you know those great movies where everyone's coming out of their graves with, like, half their faces missing and their eyes hanging out and their lips falling off? You know those?
I think I'll get sick.
And they're all walking around, like, real slow, like this. Like, they're all walking like this and kind of grunting.
Jimmy walks like a zombie. Jimmy and Suzanne are at the fair.
And they're all looking for the same thing. For regular life people to eat their flesh and drink their blood and all.
Come on, Jay, smile, smile.
They're in a photo booth together at the fair.
And they can't help themselves. Because they're dead, and it's just what happens. That's what I felt like.
They're in a car together at night.
You gotta tell me what's wrong, please.
James, do you think about me when we're not together?
All I do is think about you. When I'm not with you, I'm not alive. Mr. Meadow, you're the best thing that ever happened to me.
I can't do this anymore.
What?
I can't go home every night and have him trying to touch me. And all the time I'm just thinking about you. About us. And when I push him away, he has this temper.
What do you mean? Does he hurt you? Oh.
There were these women, you know, on the Sally Jesse Raphael show the other day. And they were all wearing disguises so that their husbands couldn't find them, and they were living in shelters, and I thought I could go and live in one of them. If they'd let me bring Walter with me,
no.
I could go and live in one of
no,
them.
No, listen to me.
Someplace
a minute.
In another state where no one even knows who I am.
Look, couldn't you just get a divorce? And then
and then he would get the condo. And he'd get the car. And he'd take Walter from me. He'd take Walter.
Listen, I know you think I'm just a kid, but I could never do anything bad to you. Or ever hurt you. A guy that does that to someone like you doesn't deserve to live. That's the truth, he doesn't deserve to live.
No. I suppose you're right. He doesn't. Oh!
Suddenly she stops crying and smiling jumps out of the car and in the pouring rain dances in the beam of the headlights. Jimmy, confused at first, smiles adoringly, a dreamy expression on his face.
Used to let me drive around in her car even though I didn't even have a learner's permit. Because she said when she'd be living in California and doing her TV shows, she'd make me her personal assistant and I'd have to drive her around places and help her answer her personal fan mail. I guess this is the most exciting time of my life. It was like living in a really great movie, except it's kind of X-rated on account of all the sex stuff, you know?
Lydia waits outside a motel by Suzanne's car with Walter. Inside, Jimmy, naked, lies on his back. Suzanne, in a shirt, leans over him.
Hey. Oh, don't stop.
You didn't answer my question.
What question was that?
Did you talk to Russell?
Yeah, I did.
Well, what did he say?
He wants $1,000.
Is that all?
And some CDs. Oh, come on.
Did you get the gun?
No, not yet.
Why not?
I don't know. I guess I thought you'd ask Lydia.
I can't ask Lydia. You have to ask Lydia. Don't you understand?
I guess so, but I
thought... Do you want me to keep doing what I was doing?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Then you have to do what you have to do.
Suzanne slides down Jimmy's naked torso, then leans over him again.
Oh, God. Ow.
So when will it happen?
Oh, come on, please don't.
I just want to know when.
It's just this. I don't know. Whenever, Jesus.
Oh. Look, if you don't know, I guess I have to find somebody who does.
Miss Amato, you have to understand this.
No, I think I do understand. Obviously, you're not the mature individual that I thought you were.
She stands up and walks to the window.
No.
Actually, I just had a thought. Maybe a better way to go on the whole thing.
What's that?
Russell.
What about him?
Russell's enough of a man to take charge of the situation.
Well...
He looks at me in a certain way. I think he'd be very appreciative of what I could do for him. What do you think?
She sits on a table, knees under her chin, displaying her long naked legs.
I think we could probably do it next week. Is that soon enough?
Would you really do that for me, James?
Anything.
She lies on top of him and slides down his body, kissing him. At the restaurant, Larry's parents hang up a sign, 1 year and still going strong.
Got it?
Yeah, Angela, stand back, tell me if it's straight.
Oh, it looks great.
Lydia is getting the gun out of her mother's wardrobe. It's wrapped in a cloth. She puts it on the floor. It's sunset. Lydia, Jimmy and Russell kneel on the beach around the gun. Larry and Suzanne walk into the crowded restaurant, smiling broadly. It's dark. Russell throws a bag into a truck and gets in, looking around. He looks out of the window and pulls away. Larry's mother carries a 2-tier iced cake into the restaurant. It has a candle on top shaped like a figure one. She puts it on a table and Suzanne bends over and blows it out. Russell pulls up outside a scruffy house. Jimmy runs out and gets into the truck. Larry arrives home to an empty house. He takes off his jacket and goes into the living room.
Hey, Walter!
He picks up the remote and switches on the TV. At the studio, Suzanne sits in front of the weather map looking at her notes. She gets up and stern-faced stands in front of the map, watched by Ed and George on camera. He counts her down. Larry goes into the kitchen. In the hall, Jimmy creeps round the corner. Larry comes out of the kitchen, lead in hand, drinking a beer. He walks into the hall and looks up the stairs. He looks down at Russell's bag on the floor. Suddenly, Jimmy grabs him from behind and wrestles him to the floor. Russell picks up a lamp and smashes it over Larry's head. On the TV, Suzanne starts her report.
Hi, everybody. This is Suzanne Stone coming to you live.
Don't fucking move.
Please, just take whatever you want. Get out, huh?
Come on, Jimmy. No.
Wait. Just wait. Okay.
This is an overnight number.
Come on, take the watch. It's a Rolex.
I know it's a fucking Rolex. This is the first time I've seen a Rolex. Give me a fucking chain. Give me a chain.
Jimmy imagines making love to Suzanne.
As you probably noticed, it's been another beautiful evening with just a slight chill in the air and those autumn temperatures right about where they should be. We'll see some overnight numbers.
No, Jim, no, do it. No, no.
No, please.
No, wait. Give me a ring.
My ring.
Give it him.
But man, I can't give you my ring. My wife will kill me.
She'd kill you? Suzanne would kill you?
And you know my wife.
The good news is.
Oh! Now, do it.
How?
Fucking now, asshole. Do it.
Jimmy shuts his eyes and shoots. Suzanne pauses in her report.
So, for the next few days, it should be just about perfect football season weather. Well, that's about it for tonight. I'm Suzanne Stone saying...
Ed stares at Suzanne. Russell and Jimmy stand over Larry. His open eye clouds over.
And if you'll allow me just a personal note, a special greeting to my husband, Larry, on this, our first anniversary. Good night, honey.
Russell and Jimmy run out. At the TV station, Suzanne sits down next to the weather map, looking pensive. The studio lights go out. Larry's parents are at home. Larry's father is at his desk using a calculator. Larry's mother picks up the phone.
Hello?
Police cars gather outside Suzanne's house. Her parents are in bed. Her father picks up the phone.
Hello.
Two detectives walk into the hall.
Got a little dirt in the nose. And this.
What?
Don't know. Feels like pieces of shell.
Janice Moretto?
Yeah, that's me.
Telephone call.
Oh, okay.
You can pull my man my quad to me.
Hello?
What?
Janice looks stunned. She puts down the phone and drops to the floor in a dead faint. The TV is still on. Detectives talk to Larry's father.
Right now!
All Saturday night around the clock.
Was there anybody else listening at the restaurant? Some guy came in and drank too much. Said something to me.
Five-piece all-wood dinettes in colonial, oak and white. Your choice, $297.
Complete king bed set. Mattress, box, frame, $297.
That's Tom Peterson.
And Glorious too.
And that concludes our broadcast day at WWEN, your community access station, serving Little Hope and the greater Hope County area.
A detective checks the TV for fingerprints, watched by Suzanne's parents and in-laws, who are sitting on the sofa comforting each other. Suzanne walks slowly into the living room. There are bright lights shining into the room from outside. She stares at the windows, frowning. Carrying Walter, she walks forward, past her sister, parents, and in-laws, out into the hall.
You don't have to talk to those people if you don't want to.
Two detectives watch her. She looks back at the hall as she walks through the open front door. Eyes wide open, she pauses on the doorstep. A TV cameraman and crew switch on their lights. Suzanne instinctively puts a hand up to straighten her hair. She touches her lips, strokes Walter, and walks towards the cameras. It's daytime. The town is covered in snow. In the sunny graveyard, Jimmy comes out from behind a tree where he's been hiding. He watches a priest surrounded by a large crowd, gathered round a coffin, flanked by microphones and cameras.
In nominis patris et filius et spiritus sanctus, amen.
That's what surprised me, that he didn't put up much of a fight. I forgot with such a mean temper. When I was standing in the hall, the gun. I was trying to keep from being too nervous,
I think about Mrs. Meadow and how we'd be together for the rest of our lives.
Let us take leave of our brother.
Living in California, Florida somewhere. Lying around on beaches where everyone goes topless. I'm working on a TV show.
When the love of Christ, which conquers all...
Unseen, Jimmy leaves the graveyard.
Amen.
In dark glasses, holding Walter, Suzanne steps forward and puts a tape machine on the headstone and stands facing the mourners, who look uncomfortable. The priest watches Suzanne with a bemused expression. Janice talks to camera at the ice rink.
I just knew. I don't know why I knew. I just knew. It was like a light just went off in my head and I knew she'd... I knew she just got rid of him. Just got in her way. Anyway, yeah. And then I didn't see her again. That was the last time I saw her. Suzanne. I'm sorry, could we stop for a second?
Suzanne opens her door to Lydia. Oh.
What do you want, Lydia?
Just to talk.
Look, I'm really busy right now. What do you want to talk about?
What we're gonna do.
We?
You and me and Jimmy. I'm scared.
There's nothing to be scared about. You and I and Jimmy are gonna stay miles away from each other. That's what we're gonna do.
Well, he's here.
Here? Shit, where?
Our street.
Jimmy leans out from behind a bush in the dark.
Jesus Christ. Get in here.
Get in here, quick.
Let me see me. You tell James to stay away, all right? What is the matter with you people? Don't you ever watch Mystery Theater or anything?
He says that he needs to see you and that he's dying of love.
Tell him to call a doctor.
And Russell wants his money and his CDs.
Oh, really? Well, you tell Russell if he doesn't keep his mouth shut, he's going to be playing his goddamn CDs in the gas chamber.
Suzanne!
What else? What do you want?
Just to be like before, like we were.
Lydia. We can't be like we were. We have to forget we ever knew each other. Get out of here.
What about the TV show in California and everything?
Oh, Jesus, did he get real?
God!
Lydia and Jimmy talk in the front garden, watched by a detective sitting in a car.
Did you tell her I love her? Yes, I did. She said you were sitting in the seat.
No. Suzanne parks outside the TV station and beckons to Ed.
Ed! Ed!
Hello, Suzanne.
Look,
how's it going?
Ed, I'm real unhappy. I haven't been able to give you an exclusive on everything that's happening.
Pardon?
I mean, there's all these competing news markets just clamoring for attention, and I have to consider any future possibilities.
Oh, of course. You know, I understand. Absolutely.
Good, good. Ed, I need to collect my tape. With all the publicity, I've decided to finish my documentary. See,
well, there's going to be a slight problem there.
Problem?
The cops took them.
What do you mean?
Well, they just came and they took them away.
Why would they do that?
Well, they said it was just standard procedure.
But those tapes belong to me!
Well, technically speaking, Suzanne, those tapes actually belong to us. I mean, to the station. I'll show you the section that piqued the cops' interest, you might say.
Today we're talking about sexually transmitted diseases and teenage attitudes toward them.
Yeah. Would anyone like to start it off?
Personally, I'm against them.
Let's see if we can be more specific. What do you think of when I say the word AIDS?
Queers. Perversion.
The old Hershey Highway.
Settle down, children.
What about you, Liddy? Supposing you were in a sexual relationship with a fellow student, would you expect that person to wear a condom?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it would depend on, you know, what kind of person he was.
Yeah, a blind person.
The teacher swats Russell with a magazine.
How about you, James? Are you personally concerned about AIDS?
Well, in my present situation, well, in the relationship I got going, I don't worry about that type of thing. She's not the kind of person. She's very clean.
Suzanne, the teacher, and Russell all seem taken aback. Then Jimmy winks, and Russell smiles knowingly. Ed stops the tape.
That's the piece Geraldo used, with some minor editing. And it was on first edition and American Justice. We made a few bucks on this one and got a nice credit.
Jimmy's mother cries as police search him at their scruffy home. They find the photo booth pictures of him and Suzanne in his pocket. Watched by Lydia, her mother and stepfather, a detective walks out of their house carrying the gun in its cloth wrapping. Three detectives walk to the water's edge. One hangs back. The other two wade, fully clothed, into the water. They approach Russell and his father, who are clam fishing up to their knees in the water. They handcuff Russell and lead him away, watched by his father. To Suzanne's tape.
As you can imagine, I was shocked beyond comprehension. Right? To think that these disadvantaged youngsters, who I had taken under my wing and spent my time with, and who would only stand to ultimately benefit from my media savvy, to think that they might be responsible for this heinous crime, it simply boggles one with disbelief. Of course, I realized, and I hope this doesn't sound callous, that the upside to all this, assuming justice prevailed, is that I would have in my documentary an extremely marketable commodity. And something that even PBS would take an interest in. Which, of course, would mean a smaller audience, but a much larger prestige factor.
You want to tell us about it?
I got nothing to tell.
Your friend Russell told us plenty.
Like what?
He said your dick was bigger than your brain.
Oh, yeah? He really said that?
I don't think he meant it as a compliment.
Fucking amateurs.
Who?
Listen, as career criminals, you guys flunk out of kindergarten. Your prints are on the gun. Your pal left a trail of clamshells all over the murder scene.
You boys did everything but leave a business card.
There's Larry Moretto's blood all over those shoes you wore.
Yeah?
And pieces of Larry's brains.
He used to beat her up all the time. He said he was gonna kill her.
I'm sure he did.
We're going to California, because she said I had real potential on TV, because of my voice.
Doing what with your voice?
Sports. Like being a sports announcer.
So when did you start banging her?
It wasn't like that.
What was it like?
It was just... We were...
You were what?
In love.
Jimmy, shaking and crying, recalls Suzanne dancing in the headlights.
We were in love.
How many times? How many times did you do it, you and Mrs. Moretto?
I don't know. Lots, I guess.
Where? In her bed? In her and her dead husband's bed?
Yeah, sometimes.
Where else?
In her car.
In her car?
Yeah. Once at school.
Jesus Christ. At school, huh?
Yeah. In the back of the gym. And once late at night at the station where she does her weather reports. And twice at the motel in Piedmont. Oh, in the back of Russell's truck. movie theater on Hayworth. Well, a couple times at her parents' house when they're away on some vacation or something. And
also in the field behind the gas station. But probably where you get your donuts and coffee and stuff. It's close.
Suzanne?
Lydia is on the phone, being wired by the police with a radio mic, a transmitter taped to her stomach. They meet up in a shopping mall. Lydia nervously touches her stomach.
Hi, Lydia. Is it my imagination or is that diet working, huh? You've lost a few pounds in there?
I don't know. I haven't been eating much lately.
So what's this about talking to the police?
Just figured that Russell would tell them everything, so...
Look, no one's gonna believe anything Russell or Jimmy say. I mean, they're just a couple of punks. They wouldn't be in this deep shit if they kept their mouths shut. There's no evidence that we're involved. I wasn't anywhere near the house. And if they did find out anything, you know who'd be in trouble, don't you? You would.
You mean,
well, Lydia, if you hadn't gone and gotten your mother's gun, Larry would still be alive, wouldn't he?
But you asked me to.
No, I didn't.
No.
Jimmy did. Don't you remember that?
But you asked Jimmy, and you told Russell that...
No, I don't think so. Will you listen to me? I never gave Russell any money. Do you understand? The way I remember, it was your plan all along. You and Jimmy, you had this crazy fixation about me, and you were getting some kind of perverted kick out of the whole idea, like people with your sexual problems tend to do.
Yeah.
And Russell went along with you because Russell is basically an evil little fucking scumbag. Well, I'll bet you were having some kind of sick, dirty sex with, in spite of your lesbian tendencies, huh, Lydia?
Wait a minute! Wait a minute! I thought we were friends!
Well, okay, then. Hmm? You take some advice from a friend. You keep your fucking mouth shut. It's their word against mine. Who are they? A bunch of 16-year-old losers who grew up in trailers whose parents sit around drinking and screwing their cousins. I'm a professional person, for Christ's sake. I come from a good home. Who do you think it's right to believe?
Suzanne smiles and waves at tearful Lydia. The detectives who've been monitoring the conversation look at each other. Suzanne and her lawyer leave the police station and face the press pack.
Thank God we still have legal procedures in this country. The court has wisely ruled this is a clear case of police entrapment. The tapes were found to be inadmissible evidence in the courtroom.
Suzanne smiles at the photographers as she's jostled through the crowd.
My client has been granted bail in the amount of $200,000. But at least she will be able to assist us in the preparation of the events.
Suzanne, please say something. I just want to say...
A flash photo.
It's nice to live in a country where life, liberty, and all the rest of it still stand for something.
Thanks. What are you going to do now, Mrs. Moretto?
I'm going to go home and walk my dog.
How are you going to address the questions?
Will you take the stand in your own defense?
Suzanne, did you get those kids to kill your husband?
I loved Larry Moretto. With all my heart.
But the fact is, my husband had a serious cocaine problem. There. I've said it. I finally said it. I believe that while I was making my documentary, Teens Speak Out, James and Russell became acquainted with my husband without me knowing and got him addicted to drugs and became his main supplier. And when he tried to break free of them, or maybe when he told them that he was thinking of turning them into the law, they killed him. I had no intention of revealing this dark side of my late husband's character because I wanted to spare his parents the pain. But I just don't have a choice anymore. I have to defend myself with the truth.
Larry's parents and sister watch TV in the empty restaurant. Larry's father smashes the screen with a bat.
And I know someday, when my fight is over, I will be joining my husband in the heaven that he so fervently believed in.
And that was the last time that we...
The last time we saw her.
And that pretty well brings us up to date. Answer your phone call, which I must say wasn't entirely unexpected, since in the last few days, a number of interesting offers for my story have been literally pouring in from the networks and some major movie studios. I totally understand why we'll be keeping this meeting confidential until such time as we may come to a mutually beneficial agreement. And I have to admit that I really do enjoy the spy story aspect of our first rendezvous, if I may call it that. Because I think that being a good investigative reporter is very much like being a kind of secret agent. I hope you enjoy viewing this document, which I believe could serve as the kind of first draft that you Hollywood people are so richly rewarded for. Well, I guess that's a wrap.
Suzanne stands up in her living room and switches off the camera. She takes out the video cassette and puts it in her bag. She zips it up and smiles and leaves. Larry's mother is at the grocer's. She is driving. She looks in the mirror and wipes the lipstick from her teeth. She drives down a country road. It's sunset. There is snow on the ground. She parks by a deserted bridge over a frozen river. A man in an overcoat approaches the car. She smiles and winds down the window.
Suzanne?
Yes.
Finally. The famous Suzanne Moretto. How nice to meet you.
He squeezes her hand very hard.
Did you come all the way from Hollywood?
I came a long distance to see you. Who's this?
Oh. This is Walter.
Walter. Hi, Walter.
I don't know why, but I thought that you'd be older. Running a big studio and everything.
Well, I am older. Come on up. I want to show you something.
Okay. You know, I brought my tape.
Let's go. Let's go. Come on.
Suzanne gets out carrying Walter, who's wearing a knitted hat. The man leads her down a snowy bank.
Where are we going?
To show you.
What?
Has to do with your story. It is so funny.
I don't see why we have to go.
Well.
He guides her, slipping on the ice under the bridge, around the water's edge, towards a big, weather-boarded, ramshackle building on the riverbank. The area is deserted, the bridge empty, the river covered in a thick layer of ice. The sun is setting. Larry's mother is serving the two detectives in the restaurant.
This is for you.
Thank
okay?
You very much.
You will.
Thanks, Mrs. Moretto.
Moretto's.
È fatto. La notte in acqua. No, non fa niente.
I understand. Thank you.
Larry's father takes a call from the man in the overcoat. He's standing by a car. Walter barks from the front seat. Larry's father puts down the phone and looks across the restaurant at his wife, who returns his gaze. An icy wind blows snow across the frozen river. Under the thick ice, a shape appears. It's possible to make out a woman's suit and the frozen face of Suzanne, eyes shut, just under the surface of the ice. Jimmy is in prison.
I'll be here every day for life. Plus 30 years. I've lived that long. Russell copped a plea and got only 16 years. I miss him. He's my friend. And Lydia, too. She's okay. Mostly Mr. Meadow. And the weird thing is now it's hard for me to even remember what you look like. You know? Except when I dream about her. Which I do every night. I dream I'm at a baseball game. I'm way up in the broadcasting booth. And I'm calling all the plays. And she's sitting right next to me. With her hand on my leg. Feeling me up. I can hardly wait to get to sleep at night.
Suzanne used to say that you're not really anybody in America unless you're on TV. Because what's the point of doing anything worthwhile if there's nobody watching? So when people are watching, it makes you a better person. So if everybody was on TV all the time, everybody would be better people. But if everybody was on TV all the time, there wouldn't be anybody left to watch. That's where I get confused. Anyhow, they're flying me to go on Oprah next week, and I hope she's going to give me some diet tips. And Phil Donahue called, too. But to tell you the truth, I'm kind of nervous about that one, because I honestly can't follow what he's saying most of the time. There's some others, too, that I can't really remember offhand. But it's really something when you think that I'm the one who's going to be famous. Suzanne would die if she knew.
And six.
The images of Lydia multiply across the screen. A girl with a clapperboard walks in front of Lydia. Janice is skating on the frozen river where Suzanne's body is lying under the ice. She skates backwards, then in a circle, her leg outstretched. She stops, her hands on her hips. She sets off again and idly skates in circles. The end.
Do you think I see some other cat looking over his shoulder at me? And he's strange, sure is strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. Rich. Oh no.
When I look out my window, what do you think I see? And when I look in my window, so many different people to be. It's strange. Sure is strange. You got to pick up every stitch. You got to pick up every stitch. Two rabbits running in your ditch. Oh no, must be the season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch, yeah. Must be the season of the witch. Where'd I go? Where'd I go?